literally like nothing. I didn't imagine that anything that has happened over the past two and a half years that I've been in this area, you know, would have happened when I first got here. When I first got here, there wasn't a poetry scene. And so I was just trying to do what I love. I just tried to, you know, walk in my purpose, right? And, you know, God was just pulling me in a particular direction and to just keep walking in my purpose, and more doors were opening and more things were falling in my lap and more people were reaching out. And that's what happens when you are walking in what is aligned for you, walking in what it is that God is calling you towards, because the things are going to, it's not going to feel forced. It's not going to feel rushed. It's not going to feel like a rock in a hard place. It's going to feel smooth, right? the Red Sea will part and you will be able to walk through it in a way that like it is, you know, it feels like it is the right space for you to be in at the right time.
Introducing the Poet Life Podcast. Go check it out today on your favorite platforms, including iTunes, Apple Music, and the website, thepoetlife.com.
Hey, it's Christoph Jenkins, founder and creator of The Poet Life, but obviously the host of the Poet Life Podcast. And listen up, folks, I'm really excited today. I'm with a young lady, Lyrical Faith, and she's a dope poet and so much more. We're going to get to that. And Lyrical Faith, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Blessed, black, and highly favored.
I know that's right. I appreciate the time that you carved out for me. You know, we've spoken before, on Instagram Live before, was it?
Yes.
Yeah. I can't remember the conversation that we were having, but it was a good conversation. I do remember that. Yeah, so we're just going to continue that. But I've noticed that you've been doing a whole lot more since then.
Always moving.
Yeah. So as far as that movement, right, when and where did poetry come in for you? What stage of life?
What stage of life?
Well, yeah, we're jumping right in.
Ooh, okay. When I was 12 years old, I've been writing and performing since I was 12. It was introduced to me by my sixth grade English teacher. She goes by the name of Ms. Brown. And she introduced spoken word to us in the classroom, in the middle school classroom, in the English classroom, by way of the curriculum. Instead of doing like this old kind of washed out poetry curriculum that like some teachers do with like, you know, just only giving us some sort of like Shakespeare or Sylvia Plath or Robert Frost or something like that, she actually decided to take it a step beyond that and introduce us to spoken word poetry. And she's showing us videos from Deaf Poetry Jam, and she's introducing us to, you know, Maya Angelou saying her poems out loud, and she's giving us like all of these rules or, you know, structures to understanding the interactiveness of spoken word. And so from there, I took that and ran with it. It was like the first thing that I felt really good at. And I always knew that I wanted to be in front of people. I always knew I wanted to be in front of a camera. When I was growing up, I wanted to be an actress. I took like professional acting classes when I was in middle school. But poetry felt like the first thing that clicked. And so from there, I kept a journal and I wrote every single day.
Really? So was that an English class you said?
Yep.
English class. Okay. Gotcha. And instead of what the world is used to poetry being, where you in high school study dead poets and what we think they meant and all of that stuff, right? To introducing spoken word poetry.
It's time to create an unforgettable experience at your next event with The Poet Life by booking a keynote poet. Poets excite your audience with motivating messages, charismatic delivery, colorful rhythm, powerful prose, and heart-filled stories with a style of spoken word that's tailored specifically to your event. The Poet Life has keynote poets in your city of all ages and backgrounds.
Visit thepoetlife.com to learn more and book your poet today.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, and I, this is a lot of what I talk about in the work that I do now, but just this idea of when you open that door and you create that access and that spark in the classroom, right? English teachers have the power to create an impact that they have no idea will leave an imprint on a child's life. And mm-hmm. So that's why I feel like it's so important for our educators to incorporate spoken word poetry into the curriculum, not just poetry, but spoken word in particular, because as a Black woman and as a person who went to a predominantly Black and brown school in East Harlem, it was a school where, you know, everybody is a student of color. And so like there's a particular way in which Black and brown students are able to engage in spoken word that just connects in a manner that is just different from other things that you usually see in the English curriculum. And so, but it really takes that person. It really takes like that individual teacher that is making an active choice to decide to teach poetry in this way. Mm. And so anyway, I could probably talk for days about that, just because that's actually my life's work and like all the research that I do and like everything that I talk about in my professional work right now. So, but yeah, I just think that it's really important for that particular access point to be met in order to engage with students of color in a certain way.
Mm. So because it's spoken word, what do you think the difference would have been if it was simply page poetry and not stage poetry?
Well, we had already learned about page poetry. Right. We learned about plenty of page poets. They were just old, dead white people. Right. That's what had been happening that whole time. Because typically, first of all, I mean, like a great majority, if not 80, then maybe 90% of the nation's teachers are white women. And so thankfully for me, Ms. Brown is a woman of color. Mm-hmm. And I went to a school where I did have teachers of color. Mm-hmm. But I've heard that that's not the case and for many Black and brown students across the country. And so I think that there's always like this gravitation mm-hmm. for, you know, these predominantly white women teachers to, you know, potentially like teach poetry or, you know, poetry. If you look at like the Common Core standards in many of the English, you know, curriculums and things of that nature, poetry does come up as an option. It's like there's a particular mm-hmm. unit where they got to go over X, Y, and Z types of things, and poetry comes up and you have the option of, you know, doing poetry or something else, right? Reading a book that, you know, can teach them these elements, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever skills are transferable. And so because poetry's there, you know, some teachers will decide like, okay, like I will teach them poetry, but then you can only teach what you know. Mm-hmm. So if you're not exposed or if you have no idea about like spoken word in a particular manner, then you're not necessarily, you might, just because of like when I was in middle school, it was the early 2000s, right? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe in 2023, right? There's a lot more like, you know, access and awareness about Black poets who have, you know, amazing books and amazing, you know, poetry on the page. And, you know, there's the Danae Smiths and there's so many people that, you know, that people can choose from, right? Mm-hmm. And when I say Danae Smith, just because Danae Smith is one of the many really, really masterful poets who have mastered writing poetry for the page and doing it on the stage, right? And so, you know, there's a connection there, right? But so there's probably more options now, but you can really only teach what you know. And so if you feel as though poetry can really only exist in a manner in which it is in a book and the students need to look at it and read it and analyze it in a particular way, and that's the way in which you're going to teach it, right? If you're not necessarily engaged in spoken word experiences or spoken word culture, then you probably know less about the ability to be able to teach spoken word in the classroom. And so just it just generally happens. Like it kind of organically happens in a way in which teachers, English teachers, will teach poetry that is on the page. And if they have students of color, then they're, you know, I would obviously think that they would try to find authors of color because there's plenty of Black poets for them to choose from. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, obviously I think that that would be happening, right? More so than like what I felt like was happening when I was back in school, right? Because like I said, we learned about Shakespeare, Sylvia Plath. And so I would assume that that's happening. But unless you're like engaged in spoken word, or you are aware of spoken mm-hmm. word culture and environments in a particular manner, you're not necessarily teaching spoken word. That's just it's not a thing that happens, right? And so that's why in my research currently, a lot of what I'm doing is like bringing awareness to that particular aspect of what can be taught in the classroom and how it can be taught in the classroom and how if you teach it in a certain way, it can meet the marks of creating the transferable skills and you can do the sure. You can still, you know, you can still meet these curricular marks and you can still expose them to a particular world that they might not have been exposed to without your opening of that door in that classroom. And so that's why I just think it's so important, because there's just widely more of a focus on like how they can teach poetry that's on the page, and just there's just a missing line of like how they can teach poetry that happens on the stage. And those experiences are so transformative and so powerful. I just feel like it's very, very important. It's a missed opportunity if it's not talked about in the classrooms in a certain light.
No, that's very true. I mean, just the different elements of spoken word, period, like public speaking, right? Enunciating and using your vocabulary, utilizing the thesaurus, the dictionary, increasing your vocabulary. I mean, that also building your confidence, because the number one fear, even beyond death, is public speaking.
Right.
You would rather die than stand
in the crowd. Right.
Yeah. But like through something that is creative and attractive like that, will even take the focus away from, oh, I'm standing in front of my peers. You know what I mean? I'm sure you've seen that in the classroom, because we have as well, and the students from elementary to, you know, middle school to high school, they're like, listen, I'm trying to get up there next. But it's like positive peer pressure, right? When we initiate the writing stage of poetry, and then, all right, so who wants to share? Especially when they're telling their story, it's a different ballgame.
Yeah. It definitely takes like some built up trust and vulnerability and something that would need to happen in the classroom or just throughout the discussion of the spoken word writing and experience process mm-hmm. in order for, you know, students to build up that level of confidence to share that. But I think that culture would have to be established and created throughout the teaching of this unit. And, you know, you can do that by examples. You can, you know, do that through like, you know, different, you know, activities. You know, they can have them share with their peers before they say things out loud. Or, you know, sometimes it's also just about like the receiving the understanding of the information and then being able to utilize, you know, the writing process as catharsis as they are forming and developing their voice and their words. And, you know, maybe one day then that will turn into them taking that off the page. But once again, I think that access point is an important light bulb that should be able to go off if it's taught and implemented properly in the classroom.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I think of one of the main reasons for writing in general is self-expression. You know, these kids, just people in general now, because everything is going on in the world, right? And most people, or just a lot of people, I don't want to generalize, but a lot of people are hoarding their experiences, their thoughts, their feelings. They don't want to talk to anybody because they feel the next person can't relate to what they're going through. And just writing alone is a form of releasing. And if you don't do that, here's the thing. If you don't do that, you're either going to do two things. You're either going to implode or explode, right? That implosion turns into mental health, problems. And explosion turns into you hurting others. And then you go to jail or even worse. You know what I mean? So when I'm talking to these principals and these administrators, and I put it to them like that, they're like, that makes a lot of sense, you know? And because when they hear poetry, it was like, oh, okay, another extracurricular activity. We're like, no. That's not what we're talking about. This is a functional tool that can help your kids change their behavior and their confidence.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny how you bring up that notion of this extracurricular activity. So I talk about that a lot in my research as well. And just like this idea of poetry being seen as this extracurricular activity means that it is, or that's that connotation is associated with it being like less important, like less valid towards a learning experience, not just not necessary. Something that's like, you know, after school, or just, you know, something that's like optional, or during, you know, just during like, you know, you can opt into it if you want to, but if not, it's kind of like studying abroad. If we're talking about it for, you know,
an elective.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I also studied higher ed. So like it's like this idea of studying abroad where like, you know, like Black students in particular, or students of color, they tend to not want to study abroad because it's too expensive. There's so many barriers, da, da, da. And it's also just seen as this luxury and just not this important part of a learning experience. Whereas like traveling the world will give you a learning experience that you cannot get on this campus. And so it is necessary. And so anyway, I like to think about that in terms of like, you know, how we're talking about like spoken word, right? Because if you look at the research and if you look at the literature on arts education, and you see what scholars have talked about when it comes to arts education, there's so much discussion on, you know, what arts education is and how it's important and how it's enriching and, you know, how schools in certain, you know, areas offer it, but then how there's also a disparity in, you know, how white students are able to access arts education versus how Black students or students of color are able to access, or students in urbanized areas are able to access arts education. And it's all of this like speculation as to why students of color aren't accessing arts education the same way that white students are accessing arts education. And that's a whole nother conversation. But then when you look at what they're defining arts education as, dance, theater, music, visual, poetry is just not, that's just not an option. Like no one looks at poetry as arts education. They're like, maybe that's something that can happen in English class, maybe, right? If there is a particular dedicated staff or staff member at the school, right? Then maybe like that student, that person can start some sort of program, right? Mm-hmm. If school offers clubs, maybe. If there's a person that's qualified and interested in leading it, right? And that's them, a staff member or a teacher taking additional time to focus and formulate, you know, a club, right? Because I don't believe that there's a teacher out there that can correct me wrong. I don't believe there's extra payment involved for being a club advisor. I believe it's like just like additional, like, you know, service role that they take on. And so, you know, there would have to be somebody who's like, you know, focused minded in that path to say like, oh, you know, there's an interested group of students. I'm an interested person who has the ability to be able to advise this or, you know, formulate this in some sort of way. And so let's do it. But that means that it's very slim pickings to be able to create some sort of like environment or experience where students can access spoken word. So that's why it generally, unless you have that type of lucky experience, right? It generally is not happening within schools. It's generally happening in the after school programs. It's generally happening in the community organizations. Mm-hmm. It's generally happening outside of school. And if you are a student that just like is for, you know, for some reason you've discovered that this is something that you're interested in because of like the things that you see online. And mm-hmm. so social media is big now. Social media wasn't a thing when I was, you know, back in middle school, even most of high school. But you know what I'm saying? Like, because of social media and those types of things that we have, that students have now, they're probably like, oh, well, where can I find something like this in my city? Where can I find something like this in my community, right? And that's only if your city or your community has a thriving spoken word scene or yeah. thriving spoken word youth poetry programs and things like that. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. there's so many things that can be done to increase access mm-hmm. to spoken word so that students can access it at a younger age, essentially, yeah. and be able to kind of like utilize that and empower, you know, themselves and, you know, find their voices in a particular way. And you know, I just say you never know the types of opportunities and doors that you're opening if there is more access available, particularly when it comes to students of color, and particularly around the ways in which students of color and Black students in particular engage in mm-hmm. the arts.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. You know, and it also is great for those students on I want to make sure I'm using the terminology correctly, but on the spectrum, if you will, those autistic children, like the arts is what really brings them alive, you know, and opens their eyes and studies them, you know, and it's interesting how some, I don't like to generalize again, but some schools don't recognize that. But at the same time, it takes the poet to explain and share that with them so they can actually see. And so tell me about your research. And like you talked about you at 12 years old, right? Like from 12 to the high school years, where did it take you?
Okay. So to the high school years. So similar to types of schools I've been describing, my high school didn't have any like extracurricular clubs or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, nothing of that nature, right? So I, after having found poetry in middle school, I'm thankful to this teacher and this unit and, you know, me like sticking with it, I took that with me into high school, and there was really no space at my high school to participate with like in-school activities. So I found out-of-school activities that serviced that craving for wanting to be around a community of artists and poets. So I joined several community-oriented organizations mm-hmm. that were, you know, arts programs for youth, one being Impact Repertory Theater. I grew up between the Bronx and Harlem. So Impact Repertory Theater is a nonprofit organization in Harlem. And then from there, you know, joining Impact, it's the whole entire like mission and theme of Impact is arts and activism. And we call ourselves artivists. And so, you know, mm-hmm. that instilled a lot of like performance confidence in me. I was able to kind of like really explore and discuss and be around like, you know, the artsy people that I just did not have in my high school. And so and then from there, I, you know, because of like the connections and things that I made through Impact and, you know, another organization that I joined as well, I became a co-founder of the longest running open mic and showcase in Harlem, known as the Harlem Bomb Shelter. And so I became a co-founder of that. And so that organization hosted regular open mics, showcases, slams, made a play, so many different things that we did with the Harlem Bomb Shelter. And so that's actually how I began curating, because I was in this position where I'm the co-founder of this organization, and you know, I already know and have like skills in relationship to events and how to put events on. And so I'm pretty much doing that, and it's centered around poetry and centered around things that I love, and I'm with people who I love. Mm-hmm. And it's for my community. And that's really kind of like where my heart was at. That's where my bread and butter was at. And then like later on that year, that's actually when I left for college. I attended Syracuse University, and I joined the first thing I did was look for the very first, like, when I tell you it was the first week on campus and there was a club and activities fair, I'm there looking for the poetry program because I'm like, there has to be. I was like, Syracuse is very well known for their student affairs life. There's like over 300 clubs and student organizations. I was like, there has to be something in relationship to poetry here. And I found it. There was a very, very good and thriving spoken word poetry program called Verbal Blend. Shout out to my mentor, Cedric T. Bolton, who is the founder of Verbal Blend. And so I found Verbal Blend when I got to college, and I just stuck with it. I was Verbal Blend all 4 years, participated in the workshops, participated in the poetry slams. We had like some of the most amazing featured artists that were on the poetry touring scene at that time. Rudy Francisco, Alicia Harris, Carvin's Lesant, Joshua Bennett, Zora Howard, everybody came to my school. And so Lemon, Sheehan, they all were there. Bosia. So anyway, what I did and what I usually tell people that you should do is if you're interested in like continuing to expand your spoken word career, right? You are, you know, if you're moving to certain places or if you're in certain communities or if you're in certain cities, you are actively getting involved in the things that are around you in that space. And you are actively, you know, forming, you know, relationships with the programs and the artists and the people and the curators who are, you know, creating artistic events and poetry events in your community. And you're hitting up every single open mic and you're doing every event and you're, you know, never really turning down a chance to perform and share your stuff. And you're always working on new stuff. So you always have things to share.
Yeah.
And you're having community with people because it's really through the community that you are, that you're finding like your identity as an artist. And that's what happened with me as well, right? Like you're leaning on people for support and feedback and, you know, bouncing ideas off of each other and keeping each other inspired and keeping each other motivated and sharp. Mm-hmm. And if you have like a mentor or like an elder in the poetry community that's sewing into you, like mine did, you know, they're asking you like, well, what do you want your brand to be? Well, what do you want to be known for? Well, you know, if you're talking about that, that means you're really passionate about that. You should write about that. And, you know, all of the things that come along with like what's forming a young artist's mind as you are kind of like going out and endeavoring to and then, you know, a mentor is also helping you in terms of like, okay, well, how do you want to take this to the next level? Like, how do you want to, you know, when do you want to start charging for this? And all of those things as well. And so, you know, all of those conversations that come along with as you're like forming your brand and your identity. So that those are the things that happened with me. And then post-college, of course,
came back
to the city and just started rocking and rolling. But
yeah, you just gave a masterclass in the timeline of what you can and should do, you know, when you're in a new space. I hear often, you know, that there isn't a scene where I am. Open mic's not really a thing right now. And, you know, my perspective on that is that's actually not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing because if there's a void, that means you can fill it.
Oh yeah, that's what I did. That's what I did where I'm at now. if there isn't a scene there, start one.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally.
Yeah.
Literally, I did.
Yeah. So not only the scene, but if you don't find or see poets in your area, be the poet to go to.
Absolutely.
Right. So that means there's no saturation. There's no competition, if you will. Be the poet that people call up to go perform at this church and this event and this conference, you know? Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Because I don't think I told the people where I'm at and what I'm doing now, but So currently I'm in my third year of my PhD program. The University of Massachusetts at Amherst, the largest public research institution in the state of Massachusetts, as well as the entire New England region. And I am in the social justice education program. My research focus is in arts and activism through the lens of spoken word poetry, to be brief, because no one will have the capacity to understand exactly what I'm doing, but unless we're up here talking for like another 15 minutes about it. But so when I moved to Western Mass, if you know anything about Western Massachusetts, you don't know anything about Western Massachusetts. So when anytime I tell anybody that I live in Massachusetts, they automatically think I'm in Boston. I have to explain to them I'm literally nowhere near Boston. I am closer to Connecticut than I am to Boston. But even Connecticut is like an hour away. The largest major city is Springfield, Massachusetts. But in general, I live and convene and work in a very small town surrounded by very small towns. There are more farms out here than anything else. And so you could probably imagine that when I had to move out here 2.5 years ago from New York City, of which where I was born and raised and the state in which I've resided in my entire life, it was a very, very adverse experience. So anyway, moved here. The first thing I do, like I did in my other situations that I've been in throughout my life, is I immediately start looking up the poetry scene and the poetry programs and poetry events and the poetry curators. And this was 2021. And if anybody remembers anything about 2021, it was real pandemic-y. And there wasn't really nothing popping at all. The closest anything popping was in Boston, which is a 2-hour drive. And so, And so there, like, as far as the actual area in which I knew I had to live and reside for the next 5 to 7 years, potentially, there was nothing as far as I could see. Or if there was something, it completely never came back. It didn't come back in. It wasn't back in fruition just because of, you know, everything having been closed down. So I said, I got to do something about this. So I, being the person that I am, I guess I went ahead and I just started making connections, started sending out emails, started setting up meetings with people. And from there, it spiraled into me being the host and curator of three poetry events in the three poetry open mic and showcase series in the area. Mm. And so I am the host and curator of the monthly open mic and showcase poetry night that happens on campus at UMass Amherst. Mm. I bring an award-winning, renowned spoken word artist out to campus to feature for a particular showcase night that happens every month. And I've done a lot of groundwork, a lot of organic interactions with like the undergrad students, the grad students, the community members, the staff members, the faculty people, all of that just to pretty much gather and create a crowd and gather and create an audience that mm-hmm. I was able to grow and build. And I've been doing that. I started my first showcase with doing that, curating that, was in February 2022. So I've been doing that for almost 2 years now. And it has grown beautifully. And so I did that. I'm also the host and curator of a open mic and showcase that happens at a Black-owned restaurant in downtown Springfield called Dewey's Lounge. And I've been doing that since January 2022. And so, you know, in that scene, it's like, you know, the folks that are in Springfield, Massachusetts, which are, you know, a lot of there are a lot of Black folks there. And so there's this, you know, this young adult, you know, scene. It's like a Dewey's is like a jazz lounge. And so it's this cool vibe and mm-hmm. people are Black and people mm-hmm. are, you know, having fun and people are super unapologetic. And there's like, you know, poets and artists in that area and they've been coming out and they've been supporting me. And for somebody who's not, you know, from that community, but has like, you know, merged and have become of that community because I was able to kind of like bring some of my experience and my skills and kind of like merge relationships with the folks in that area and in that scene, that's a blessing, right? Because mm-hmm. people could be like, who's this? Like, I'm not supporting you. Yeah. So that's those are just some of the things that happened. And then I was also hosting another showcase in downtown Amherst for a while as well. And from there, the word just got around town. Like there were so many people that reached out to me. I began to be the person that was the person to call or email when a local teacher at the high school wanted to have a poetry workshop with their students when people found out that I taught poetry workshops. And so mm-hmm. I've traveled and I've done poetry workshops at high schools, middle schools, and an elementary school all across the area of Western Massachusetts. I've been on NPR because the station, the radio station out here, New England Public Media, which is a subset of NPR, has had me be the co-producer of various like shows and events that they've had. And I've been, you know, on commercials on the radio and this, that, and the third with NPR, with NEPM. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, am now the co-producer and the host of the annual Pioneer Valley or Regional Youth Poetry Slam that happens here every year. And the first one happened earlier this year in April, and the second one is going to happen later on this year in this upcoming April 20 of 2024. And I just had a meeting with them about that this morning. And so there have been so many opportunities and doors that have opened alone just for me deciding that I wanted to create a scene. and really speaking, me creating the scene was selfish. I wanted a scene here because I just knew that I wasn't gonna, if I had to live here and work here and exist here, I wanted some sort of poetry. I wanted some sort of community and some sort of interaction with poetry. And if I didn't have that, I felt like I was gonna go crazy. Mm-hmm. And so me having that, it spiraled into everything, like all of these business endeavors, all these community relationships that have been formed, that have been built, and that have been monumental and instrumental to the actual purpose of why I'm here, which is my research and me being a PhD student, a doctoral student in studying spoken word poetry as it pertains to youth, as it pertains to youth of color, as it pertains to Black youth that are in schools and how they can engage with spoken word in school and outside of school as it pertains to poetry slam. And so that's really my life's work and what I spend 100% of my time doing since I've been here for the past 2.5 years now.
Okay. So you've been there 2.5 years and you'll be there for 7 in total?
You get out what you put in. So I'm aiming for 5. You know, on average, you know, you can potentially finish in 5 years. I'm coming to like a particular hump in the program where like I'm in between about to finish coursework and about to start like, you know, additional like pre-dissertation work. And so, you know, this is my 3rd year. So, you know, that could take another 2.5 years to finish. It could take 3 years. You know, it really just depends on how, you know, how much you are getting to it and getting through it and the steps that the milestones that you're meeting along the way. But yes, it could take anywhere between 5 to 7 years on average. Some people might take more or less.
Wow. So did you already have your master's or are you getting that too? Or what's...
I received my master's from New York University in 2018. So after I graduated from undergrad, I came back to New York City. I worked full time while I was pursuing my master's at NYU in higher education and student affairs with a focus in social justice. Then I worked full time for several years in education nonprofit before I had gotten my acceptance into UMass. People love to think I'm young, but I'm pretty old. I'm gonna just plug my laptop.
I doubt that. I doubt you're pretty old, but I'm sure that you're not like early 20s or something like that. But like
after talking to me, but people who don't talk to me, carded. I get carded.
That's a good thing.
Who are younger than me.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Let's just say that you look younger. You know what I'm saying? You know, my wife gets the same thing. So, you know.
Your wife's going to be hard to stop. What's she doing?
And what's crazy is I'm like, all right, they're looking at me like, wait, we got to think I'm her father or something.
She gets started, but you don't.
Yeah. I'm like.
Now that's male privilege, because that's crazy.
Beard. I don't know what it is, man, but
beard.
But that's so dope. That is awesome. I share this all the time, you know, because people try to separate their, let's just say 9 to 5, if you will, 9 to 5 from their art when the 9 to 5 that you've been in for years and have experience and history and education could actually enhance your opportunities with your poetry because you've already been accepted into that industry. They already trust you. They know you know the information and right. And so instead of saying, man, I want to throw this 9 to 5 out of the way and do this poetry full time. Great. However, find somewhere in that industry where you can actually infuse your poetry into that industry to where, because you have, I guess, elder statesmen in that industry, then that would also say, if you did the research like you're doing, you know, probably not necessarily to the extent of what you're trying to do, but like if you saw that in hospitality, you could leverage your spoken word. I know a poet, my God, was it Phelps the poet? He works with hotels where he does residencies at hotels where he's seen as like a poetic therapist. And those people upstairs who are stressed out or whatever, they can come downstairs to his office at the hotel and they tell him their story. And he writes poetry based on it. You see what I'm saying?
That's why. I haven't even heard of something like that before. You invented
a residency at a hotel.
New avenues. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, but here's the thing. We talk about self-expression. That is a form of expressing yourself, getting the stress off you, letting somebody be that listening ear, and then they either write it for you, but also they might show you how to write it. So it now becomes a tool in your tool belt to help you get to where you need to be emotionally and mentally. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, I like that so much. Tell me about some of the things that you've been doing. I've seen pictures and videos of standing in front of groups of people and things of that nature. I want to know about, you know, what are those different opportunities? What are they looking like to you?
What are the different opportunities looking like? Yeah, I mean, I've been hosting, right?
No.
I've been poetry workshopping.
No,
I have been keynote speeching.
Stop right there. The keynote poet, right? I've always asked that question. Why aren't more poets speakers? When they already command the stage and control the crowd and enunciate all that, you know, why do you think that we have not equated the skill for spoken word to public speaking?
You know, I think it's interesting, right? You have to be able to transform a little bit. And you have to be able to have a particular set or, you know, you have to have a baseline for, you know, what it is that you are, the story that it is that you're trying to tell. And I think that as poets, we generally have that foundational knowledge of being able to tell a story. And even as we're doing a feature set, I mean, a feature set is almost a mini keynote. It's just one that, like, you know, that you created for your brand.
Yes.
And as opposed to like an organization telling you, hey, we need you to do this sure. For these people. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so as a featured poet, right, you know how to do a set and, you know, flawlessly connect the dots between mm-hmm. It's all your story, right? So, you know, you're connecting the dots, you know, from your intro piece to your outro piece to everything that you're doing in between, to how you're talking us through it and how you're walking us through these points and times in your life and your thoughts and your emotions, right? You might be telling little funny stories or jokes in between, right? Mm-hmm. You know, if you're crafting your feature, masterfully. Mm-hmm. And so a keynote, there, you know, there is that mm-hmm. that is a thing, but, you know, you are addressing a particular crowd for a particular reason, right? They need you to, you know, be, they need you to be empowering, because these are students that might be, you know, facing a particular set of challenges, and you need to give us all empowering stuff. And there needs to be some sort of connection to education, because we want to encourage them to stay in school. Or, you know, you need to be inspiring, because these are people that, you know, all suffer from addiction, and, you know, you can't say certain things that will trigger them. And, you know, you can't say certain things that might demotivate them, or, you know what I'm saying? And so there's that. Or these are, you know, these are athletes, or these are all entrepreneurs, or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is. And so you're crafting. And if you are, like I said, a masterful, you know, spoken word artist that does, you know, go around and has like a lot of feature opportunities, then, you know, your poems, you know, your tool belt. And so you know how to arrange whatever you have in a particular way to tell a particular story. And you can honestly, if you do it right, you can honestly connect almost anything with almost anything. Mm-hmm. You just got to know what to say and how to work around that. So I will say that when I did my recent keynote speech, it was for a youth empowerment symposium for students, all Black and Latino students in Hartford Public Schools. And these are students, these particular students were a part of a program where they were taken out of their urban inner city schools and they were placed in suburban, predominantly mm-hmm. white schools. And so this symposium was like the first time that a lot of them were brought together and in the same room with a lot of people who look like them and who've been in the same situations like them. If you think about like The Hate U Give, like similar notions to like, you know, maybe feeling like a misfit, you know, based on where you're from, but based on like, and where you go to school at. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, having this program where they're like, I can be empowered to go back into my school and not feel challenged and not feel imposter syndrome and X, Y, and Z. And even if I don't feel those things, then I know my power and the things like that. So I created a keynote speech, and here's where I utilized my skills outside of poetry, which are my research skills and my the things that I talk about it, as far as like the things that I am reading in my literature, the things that I'm writing about, the terms that I'm using from different scholars in the field, and I'm using my educator background to incorporate that into my poems, right? And that mm-hmm. and that is the baseline of my story. That is the point of my speech, right? The speech isn't all poems, right? It's me legitimately looking up or going through the elements of what creates a good keynote speech by giving mm-hmm. them a particular story or particular character to hold on to, a particular concept to understand, and then taking them through, like, you know, how this relates to them in this present day, in this present time, mm-hmm. and how this can push them forward through whatever struggle they are experiencing, and how my poems can intertwine and relate to those stories. And so I did that by talking about Frederick Douglass, mm-hmm. and I did that by talking about the education system and how it's flawed. And I did that by talking about freedom dreaming and Afrofuturism. And so there are, and then I, implementing my poems in different areas where it made sense. And so that's how I structured mine. But you poets structure yours the way that it's best fit for you, and the way that it's best fit for the skills and the background knowledge and the life story and the life experiences that you come with. And that's what makes you unique, right? You bring whatever it is that you bring to the table. You bring whatever it is that you bring from whatever your life is leading you to bring based off of, like, you know, because they reach out to you for a reason, right? These people found me. They found me. They didn't even find me directly. They Googled me and didn't know how to get in contact with me. So they contacted my job, and my job contacted me to let me know that they were looking for me. You know what I'm saying? So they found you because, you know, however they found you, right? You fit a particular archetype. Or let's say they didn't find you. Let's say you found them, but then they accepted you. They were like, hey, we do want you to do this. You fit a particular archetype for what they are looking for as far as, like, who they feel like would be the best presenter for their population, right? There is a match. So whatever it is that you bring, right, is important, is essential, is the connecting bridge to whatever it is that they saw in you, right? So you just have to kind of, like, channel that and see that in yourself. Yep. and then bring whatever that is, because whatever it is that you're talking about in your poems, whatever it is they see you doing in your work, in the community, in your professional life, they know that, like, bringing that knowledge to their community is going to be helpful to them. So honestly, it really is uniquely you that makes the keynote speech and what it is. Yeah. And so poets should absolutely tap into that, because all we're doing is really telling our stories, and that's what we're already professionals at anyway.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you confirmed that, because, you know, that industry has already been established, right? The public speaking industry is already established, which means there's already a going rate and right. And even the most amateur can get $500, can get $1,000 for their speech. But, like, for you to be a public speaker that can also infuse spoken word into your presentation, that has you stand out from the crowd and even increases your value.
Yep.
Right? Yep. Because even the most veteran of public speakers can't do what you do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even the most veteran of public speakers are not poets. Exactly. they might bring people to, you know, tears or emotional, you know, emotional experiences.
Yeah.
But you're doing that too, but you're doing it in a different way. You're doing it in a way that they can't do. And so you're capitalizing off of that.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, for people, I guess, lay persons outside of poetry, who might not accept you as, hey, I'm a poet, but they may accept you as, I'm a public speaker who infuses poetry into my presentation. I'm like, oh, that's it. You see what I'm saying? For the people who only know poetry to be what they knew it to be in high school, they'll be like, we've never had that before. You know, how much is that? Right. So for fixed minded people, they may say, well, I want poetry to be at the forefront. And, well, here's the thing. It takes time for poetry to be at the forefront, and it takes you making the case study that poetry can be at the forefront. So people have to see it. If they don't know, they don't know. Mm-hmm. They're not going to experiment with their money. So you got to show them that, listen, man, like, no, I need you to see. I need you to see that poetry has just as much as value or even more than any other art form out there. You know what I'm saying? And so I can appreciate what you're doing. I love how you're infusing all of what you're doing. That is the perfect example of you creating the life you want to live.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I will say, like, if you are a poet that is trying to figure out how you can, you know, do the keynote thing, or, like, you know, write you know, a keynote speech that is, you know, unique to you, but you're trying to figure out where to start, I would say it would help to look at TED Talks by poets, right? Because that's literally what they're doing. So there's a really, really great TED Talk by Pages Matam. I would suggest that one. There's also a great TED Talk by Shasta Ray. I would also suggest that. And there's tons of others. And so you can see like how they are talking about something or talking about an idea or engaging. And you can even just watch other TED Talks and just see how they are engaging an idea in a crowd and how they are relating it back to themselves or their stories or whatever it is that is important for them, and see where your poem fits. And when you write out your story and when you think about how you would engage a crowd things will, you continue, like I said, if you continue to do things, this is literally how this works. If you continue to do things and continue to promote and discuss and, you know, brand yourself as a person that is continuing to do things, it's like magnetism. Like you will continue to attract the opportunities that are aligned with what you are doing. Yeah. You just have to continue to do them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is you packaging yourself well. And something that is packaged well, I don't care if what's in the package is trash, the package itself attracts the people to that actual thing, you know? And I'll take a step further, like you did when you were young, take some classes. You know what I mean? Like take some acting classes, take some public speaking classes. What is it? You can do online now. The speaking one, got chapters around the country, around the world. What is that? Can't even think of the name, where you basically learn how to public speak. Shoot, I can't remember the name of it. Man, that's going to kill me. But
anyway, leave it in the comments.
Yeah. Y'all know what I'm talking about. I want the poet to appreciate the gift that they were giving so much that they are willing to invest in themselves to a level of taking classes to enhance the gift that they had. Right? Like add more value to the gift. That makes you more valuable. You know, your doctorate, your research, all of that is adding more and more value to what you already have. You could have just done what you've done. No, you said, you know, I'm taking a step further and going farther, and I love what I'm doing. And so because I love what I'm doing, I am going to appreciate to a level where I'm going to add some more value to it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a business strategy in and of itself. Like, how are you adding more value to what it is that you can bring to an institution, right? When I get reached out to by colleges and universities and, you know, schools and whatever, you know, how it is that you can add a particular value to their student population that they feel like there's a need for, and that you can, you know, fill that void. Yeah. And that is how you get a certain dollar amount discussed, and that's how you, you know, get called back for things, and that's how you build relationships with people and students and places. Mm-hmm. That's how you become known for those things, right? Yeah. I'm just literally like nothing. I didn't imagine that anything that has happened over the past two and a half years that I've been in this area, you know, would have happened when I first got here. When I first got here, there wasn't a poetry scene. And so I was just trying to do what I love. I just tried to, you know, walk in my purpose, right? And, you know, God was just pulling me in a particular direction and to just keep walking in my purpose, and more doors were opening and more things were falling in my lap and more people were reaching out. And that's what happens when you are walking in what is aligned for you, walking in what it is that God is calling you towards, because the things are going to, it's not going to feel forced. It's not going to feel rushed. It's not going to feel like a rock in a hard place. You are going to, it's going to feel smooth, right? the Red Sea will part and you will be able to walk through it in a way that like it is, you know, it feels like it is the right space for you to be in at the right time, right? Mm-hmm. The, you know, these people, they called me, right? You know, the regional youth poetry slam did not exist before this year, right? And they reached out to me because it just so happened that there was a group of students that, you know, saw a poet perform there, and they said that they really wanted this thing to happen for them, and they wanted to be a part of a slam. And people in the area were like, oh, well, you know, who can be reached out to for this? And then all of a sudden, like, my name got floated to the executive director several times, mm-hmm. and I got a call. So mm-hmm. if you're walking in your purpose, if you're walking your path, things are going to align. They're going to open up for you, right? Mm-hmm. And so you said that thing about building and creating, you know, the lifestyle that you want, right? You know, we talked about this whole nine to five, and, you know, like people feeling like they have to separate their 9 to 5 and their 5 to 9. Mm-hmm. No, make that your 24. Like, you can make that your 24, right? Minus your sleep and self-care and the things you got to do for yourself. Yeah, yeah. You can make that your 24 and not feel like you have to be so siloed and live these separate lives. Mm-hmm. If you are truly walking your path and you're dedicating your time and your mind and your energy to the spaces that are attracting you and that you are attracted to, right? There's a certain ease and agility that comes with being in spaces that want you there.
Yeah. And in that, you don't have to chase anything.
Oh, yeah.
You've been attracted to yourself because you make yourself more attractive, and people can see that you're walking in your purpose.
And your worth and your value, right? Never chase, right? You know, there's an expression about, like, you know, just like value, and how, you know, when we're talking about, like, you know, like when people try to ask you to, like, lower your price or, you know, discounts or whatever, you think about how people pay for what they find value in. Mm-hmm. People are attracted to what they find value in. And when you think about brands, like, for example, Louis Vuitton, right? Louis Vuitton never goes on sale. And yet there are many people that walk around with Louis Vuittons, right? Yeah. And they've created a particular luxury brand that, like, you know, people just find value in and they are attracted to. And so they will save and they will work to get that Louis Vuitton, right? And it's not because it went on sale. It's because they want that Louis Vuitton. So be the Louis Vuitton. Don't.
You just said what I say all the time. Be your own celebrity. Be your own celebrity and be your biggest fan, you know? And because we, as mere mortals, if you will, we worship celebrities. Okay, cool. Treat yourself like a celebrity and present yourself as such. Because if you don't, you know, you all fall into that imposter syndrome. I really don't believe that you should be 100% humble. I think there's a safe balance, leveraging ego, because where does your confidence come from? You know, like, the word ego is not 100% negative.
I believe that.
Yeah. Because if you're 100% humble, people are going to walk all over you.
Yes. And also, who are you to humble me when I serve God, right? Like you should not, you know what I'm saying? Like, people, this world, people will try to humble you. Yeah. And, you know, it's crazy. I can't believe you said that, because I was just talking about that today. But people will try to humble you. People will, you know, send you messages and leave comments and say things about you and make you, oh, this person thinks they all that and they this, that, and the third. Well, clearly I'm doing something right. Because you wouldn't be talking about me if I wasn't, right? And so, you know what I'm saying? Like, and then, you know, and who are you to say that I shouldn't be what I believe that I am? Like, who are you to say that I shouldn't be great, right? Mm-hmm. When my goal is to be great. I've spent so much time being told that I'm not great by this world, especially as a Black person, especially as a Black woman, right? And especially as, you know, whatever you are, whatever, you know, whatever struggles that, or whatever, whoever has been through, right? You spend so much time being told that you are not great by this world. Why at the moment in the time that you've built and you've worked and you, you know, shed blood, sweat, and tears that you can't feel like you are who you actually say you are? Be great. Let your light shine, right? People want to talk about it, but then don't want to let people feel and be about it. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, don't. I hate this idea where this culture where people would feel like they could just humble you.
Right.
Like, only person I'm getting humbled by is God himself.
Yeah. It's very real. It's very real. And I think we've been conditioned to believe that we can't say that we are great, and somebody else has to say that we are great. Like, I had that conversation with somebody. I can't remember who it was, but I said, "Well, you know, you're great." She was like, "Well, no, I'll let somebody else say that I'm great." I'm like, "No, I can't let you believe that. I can't let you, in good faith, I could not let you believe that you can't believe and say that you're great at what you do. Your art is great." Yeah, that was, it's out there for people to believe that it is egotistical to say that you're great.
Right. And it's kind of like you have to believe it yourself, right? Before anybody else believes it. If you don't believe it yourself, then how are you walking your purpose? How are you walking your alignment? How are you doing the things that you are being called to do if you don't believe that you should be called to do those things, right? Then how are the opportunities falling in your lap? How are the people in the spaces being attracted to you that should be attracted to you if you don't walk with the air and the confidence that allows for you to brand yourself in that way? Like, you have to believe that yourself.
You know, people are afraid of being called arrogant, and people with insecurities will always think someone who is confident is arrogant. You know what I'm saying? And you have to be okay with being called arrogant and know that you aren't.
I believe that.
I have to learn that.
Listen, you think what you want to think.
I had to learn that. I would stunt my growth, all of that, you know, and not put myself out there, try to play the, you know, I just want to play the back. I don't really want to be the face of my brand and all that. I want to play the back. And all of that was stunting my growth. It wasn't until, you know, season two of this podcast, and I say, you know what, I can actually do this. I don't care what they're gonna say in the comments, you know. Yeah, all of that was a thing, you know. And I knew what I had here and here, and I didn't want to have that being stunted anymore to where I was feeling like, you know, that imposter syndrome will steal success from you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And so I'm just so glad that you are walking in yours, in your purpose, because it's obvious. And another thing with that is, if you don't believe it, that means you won't invest in yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you don't invest in yourself, why would somebody else?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Oh, are you on Threads?
A little bit here and there.
A little bit. I'm in conversations with poets, and it's almost like I'm arguing with poets about their worth. And I'm sharing them, you know, with them the many possibilities of poetry, what we're talking about. And they're rebutting, like, no, you can't do all that poetry. And they're poets, right? So, like, how can we get mad at people outside of poetry for not taking poetry serious if we don't.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree with that. There's so much to be said there about just knowing, believing, and acting as though this is what, you know, this is the platform and the pedestal that we're holding ourselves to, the standard that we are holding ourselves to as business people, as performers, as entrepreneurs, as artists, as people who are branding, as a brand. And so the world, you know, other people, whatever, you know, the people have to see that. And in order to get that and acknowledge that, it actually almost, it makes me feel a way just because it feels as though, you know, there's this air around, you know, poetry just not being as widely accepted in terms of like, you know, being this respectable art form that people, you know, pay for and all this stuff. You know, there's so many people out here trying to get poets to do things for free and exposure and all of that foolishness. And so, but then it's like, for the same event that you asked me to do a poem for exposure, you have paid a DJ $450. and that DJ deserves that money, right? But so do I. You know? And so, you know, there's also like that air around it, how like poetry is just not highly regarded in terms of like the entertainment industry. And so that's even more of a reason why there should be this bigger air around how we are caring, presenting, interacting, and utilizing our platforms and our art.
Yeah. What you got planned? What you got coming up? You know, I know you're being intentional about 2024. What's 2024 look like to you?
Ooh, 2024. Trying to think. I have a few things coming up. I have one, you know, first and foremost, and always, I am still, you know, on this path of working through my research and the things that I'm trying to do with spoken word poetry within the world of academia. So, you know, that is a whole wall and a whole thing in and of itself that I'm trying to break through. And that has been where, you know, at least like 70% of my time has been going, because I am, you know, creating the presentations and presenting at conferences and discussing spoken word poetry to educators in a way that they've probably haven't heard or understood before. And so, and I am, you know, actively performing and, you know, practicing, you know, poetry as I'm like writing and reading and discussing it as well in these academic spaces. So there's that. I will be, you know, featuring at a few, you know, poetry media platforms in 2024. I know I have a feature coming up with right about now in January, and I have a few poetry slams that I'm doing in 2024, and I am still actively working on a book that I'm going to continue to keep in prayer because I am, you know, just trying to, it's taken me a really long time to work on my book because I really want to treat my first book as my baby. And I'm putting like a lot of like intentional care into it. And I might be like over obsessing over every single detail. And so that's probably part of the reason why it's taking so long, because I just kind of want it to be where I want it to be. So there's that. And I am going to once again co-produce and host the Regional Youth Poetry Slam that's happening up here in the Western Massachusetts area. And so that's been a huge part of my work, because honestly, out of like my over 15 years of writing and performing and doing things within the poetry world, being someone who has been able to create a regional poetry slam for youth poets in an area where there are little to no poetry programs for youth and absolutely zero poetry slams for youth, it has been the most empowering experience watching their face light up and become like this person that they never thought that they could be. Mm-hmm. By being on that stage and commanding their power, mm-hmm. and speaking their truth and critiquing power structures and systems and expressing their identities and things that people have like maybe once bullied them about or have talked badly to them about, but then like them like claiming that and who they fully are and truly are and being authentically themselves. Mm-hmm. That has been the most empowering and beautiful experience that I've ever had. Mm-hmm. It tops like many life moments as far as poetry is concerned. And so that has been like a project of mine that I'm taking very seriously up here. So yeah. And I'm just around y'all. So, you know,
yeah.
Folks, reach out to me.
Yeah.
You can find me at Lyrical Faith Poetry and yeah. all the things that I'm doing. And when I'm not doing those things, I'm at the gym.
I love it. Yep. I've seen you working out and everything. That's beautiful. I love how you understand the importance of continuity in your brand, right? Name being Lyrical Faith, your social media is Lyrical Faith Poetry. I'm sure your website is lyricalfaithpoetry.com and you make it easy for people to find you and book you and pay you.
Thank you. I try not to make it hard for that to happen. We want it to be easy for people to find us and pay us.
Yeah. Yeah, and that is one of the things, the major things that makes one attractive, right? Is again continuity in the packaging, and we just I see it all the time. You know, an artist is one thing on this platform, another thing on that platform, and I'm like, all right, so I want to book you, but which one, you know, and so. More power to you. Continue to do what you're doing. I'm glad that we had this opportunity to reconnect and get to your story. We're going to do our best to get this out because not just to promote you, but other people, not just poets, will get so much out of your journey. You know, so again, I really appreciate it. If you could leave anything that comes to mind to inspire the people, what do you think it might be?
Anything that comes to mind, inspire the people. I think the people should really know that, and I said this, I touched on this briefly earlier, but I think you should really know that it's you. Right. It's you that they want. Right. If you have been reached out to by a person, organization, a school, brand, whatever it is. Right. They saw something in you. And so I need you to see that in yourself in order to believe that you are the match that they're looking for and that you have whatever it takes to deliver that. Right. I think sometimes we, you know, psych ourselves out or, you know, there's this whole confidence thing. And, you know, if you feel like you didn't do what XYZ poet, you know, who's been around on the scene for 10 years already has done, then like, you know, maybe you're not the person for this job. And that's how imposter syndrome works, right? Like we're in, you know, as a Black woman who's attended PWIs since 2012, right? I can tell you, right, that you'll be the only Black person in class and you'll be like, wow, like, what's up? Was I accepted here on accident? No, you were accepted there because they saw something in what you brought to this space that they needed, right? They need you, right? It's not the other way around, right? Yes, you need poetry, you need community, you need experience, you need relationships. But as far as like this particular space that they're calling you to be in, that you are being called to be in, they need you, right? And so you have to know that you are the person that's needed, right? You have to know that you are the person that is special and unique and that has a voice and a story that no one else can tell. Mm. Only you can tell your story. There's a lot of talk all the time around, you know, younger poets like sounding like other people, sounding like older poets, sounding like poets that are on the internet and stuff like that have, you know, all these viral views on YouTube and everything. And, you know, we do a disservice to ourselves when we are potentially, you know, caught up in like trying to do what someone else did or sound like someone else sounds, right? That works for them. Mm-hmm. You do what works for you. And that works for them in the time period that they were moving in and the spaces that they were moving in. You're in a whole different space and a whole different time. You got to do what works for you, right? And mm-hmm. so whatever you're bringing in this current age is what the people that are reaching out to you are looking for. And so I feel like wholeheartedly, if you believe in God, right, then you are, you know, following and walking in the path in which, you know, you are being called upon. You're following and walking your purpose. Mm-hmm. And as you are following, walking your purpose, you know that it is your purpose because the doors are just going to open up, right? You won't have to find the lock. You won't have to, you know, search and find the key, right? It's not the escape room. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? The doors are going to open up. And so I need people out there to, poets out there to believe and understand that.
I love it. I love it. You all heard Lyrical Faith share with you her story, her journey, and her future. I encourage you all to follow her like right now. You see it's on the screen at Lyrical Faith Poetry. Her website is lyricalfaithpoetry.com. Go check her out. Connect with her. I encourage you to engage with her. Everybody, thank you so much for listening, watching the Poet Life podcast. We have a lot happening, a lot coming up, and just connect with us. If you want to learn more about how to do more with your poetry and create a career with it, join our community. It's the poetrybusinessnetwork.com, where you can take classes, you can connect with poets around the world. But ultimately, it's the Poet Life podcast, and I am Christoph Jenkins. Still for Faith, I appreciate you.
I appreciate you too. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this. I appreciate your platform, everything that you're doing with Poet Life. And I am grateful that we had the opportunity to share space today.
Beautiful. It won't be the last.